Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Retro Rankings podcast, the only podcast where I would really recommend that you seek some kind of medical attention after listening to every episode. And today, let me tell you something, we've got a special guest on our episode. It is Cameron from the Region Unlocked podcast. Cameron, welcome.
Thank you, Paul. It is great to be here.
It's awesome to have you here. So before we get started, we got to talk about beverages. Cameron, what are you drinking today?
I'm drinking what's called a Yo Banana Boy, which is a creation of my own. Oh. Yo Banana Boy, because it's a Hefeweizen, and those kind of taste like banana bread. And my wife came up with the name because it's a palindrome. Same back and forth, Yo Banana Boy.
Got it. That is so, that sounds excellent.
Yeah, I've been waiting to break it out special for this episode. I actually made it over the summer. It's not so great actually right now, but I'll enjoy it nonetheless because I made it.
Awesome. Yeah, I was just as we record this post Thanksgiving. I always have. I'm like the bartender. I have a shelf full of liquor that I mix drinks, and I got a refrigerator full of all kinds of different beers and wines. And basically, like my aunt said, you know what? Why aren't you just brewing your own beer at this point? You know? Yeah. And I'm like, I don't have the room. Like I literally have just doing the YouTube and the podcasts, and I already have like two studios. So I'm all out of room. No. Otherwise I totally would. But yeah, that sounds fantastic. I love banana. Like if you can ship me some discreet, I'd appreciate it. But anyway, I am drinking. It's called Summer Breeze from Lautenbach's Orchard Winery in Door County. It's crafted from white Muscat grapes. It's basically an intensely sweet Moscato. It's usually served, actually, it's a Moscato that's best served over ice with fruit in it.
Oh.
I'm straight up drinking it out of the glass. I'm not icing it today.
It doesn't sound too bad. I'm not a big fan of wine, but if it's super sweet, I'll do that. Like I'm a big fan of fruit wine, apple, peach, but give me some real wine and I'm not a fan.
Yeah. I'm starting to, my taste palate is starting to expand with wines. I used to hate dry wines, like very much so. But I'm starting to, more I go up to Door County, which is basically Martha's Vineyard, and Cape Cod smashed together in the northern part of Wisconsin. It's kind of growing on me, like all different kinds of wines. I came back with a whole case last time I went to Door County. So,
dude, yeah, you're in a good place for drinks. How close are you to Milwaukee?
I am about 40 minutes west of Milwaukee.
Oh, not bad. We've taken a few trips just to hit all the breweries in there. Mm-hmm. Such a fun city. So many places to go, different drinks to get.
Yeah. And the microbrewery scene has been exploding in recent years. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just moved out of a suburb called West Allis where I think like two or three just popped up there themselves. So it's definitely, there's a lot of choices. I even, go around to some local bars, and there's this app called Untappd.
Yep.
And if these bars use Untappd, it's a good way to kind of like store what you're drinking, especially locally. And also being like this, my second home's Colorado. I also like to kind of store my Colorado beers in there as well.
Sure.
And they've got a lot of good microbrew selections going out there as well. But anyway, we could do an entire episode on alcohol, because that is also one of my passions. But Cameron, let's talk about yourself and the Region Unlocked podcast.
Okay. Yeah, Region Unlocked is my podcast that I do with my friend Jake, who couldn't be here today. Jake lives in Japan. And we started this podcast back when he got his teaching job there, which was about 2 years ago, end of the year in 2019. And I knew that was going to be tough. We were really great friends our whole lives, essentially. And we've always bonded through video games. It's all we ever did together when we saw each other. And I thought, you know, this might be a fun way to try to stay together, stay connected while you're gone. And so we started doing this podcast every week of just nostalgia. Basically, we kind of started back early 90s talking about those games and have just been slowly working our way up. And I don't know, it's been a lot of fun. Our goal has not necessarily been, you know, success, but really just to have fun talking about games. And I think it's going really well. We've already hit 64 episodes, I want to say. We're on a little hiatus right now just because it's hard to schedule sometimes because 14-hour time difference. Mm-hmm. But Jake was supposed to send us a sound clip of him saying hi, and he forgot. Mm-hmm. So, hey, Jake, hope you're having a good week. Hope you had a good Thanksgiving. Or wait, do they even have Thanksgiving in Japan? I don't think so. Or maybe it's different.
I don't know. I know some countries do a form of their own Thanksgiving, but I don't know if Japan has one or if it's around the same time. There's a guy that I watch on YouTube called, his name's Mark Smith. I think he goes by the name Retrocore.
Yeah.
And he does a lot of testing of like different video game, cheap China video game peripherals. And every now and then he'll do life in Japan videos where he just goes out and shoots things. And right now it seems like it's a beautiful time of year there from what I've seen. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, that sucks that Jay couldn't give a little shout out clip, but hello, Jake. And I wanted to say, you guys, you can totally tell listening to your podcast that you guys are having fun and the connection is there. And it's probably one of the best podcasts that I've listened to with co-hosts that just get it, that just click. And it's well, thank awesome you. Having you here. Sure, sure. You're welcome. No problem. Anything else you want to share?
I'd say similar to your podcast in that you can dive into any episode you want. It's not, it's not current events necessarily. So that way if you're scrolling through our feed, see a game you want to listen to, just listen to that episode. You don't have to listen in any order. Like all shows, it's a little rough in the beginning, gets a lot better throughout the episodes. But anyway, I love it. It's just been such a great time making that. And, you know, if you are interested, I hope you like it.
Yeah, I seriously suggest if you're listening to this to go check out Region Unlocked. It's a good listen. Just do what I did. I started most recent and started working my way back. So
okay, cool.
All right. Well, we got a lot to talk about today, Cameron.
Yes.
So let's start talking video games. What are you playing right now?
Right now, I've mostly been playing Halo Infinite.
Oh, okay. The multiplayer.
Yeah. Have you got into that?
I am actually not a Halo fan. Yeah, there's when Halo first came on the scene, I had a good friend. Every time I went to his house, that's all we did was play Halo. And I kind of always got my ass whooped because I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. That's not my type of genre of gaming. It's not to say that I don't dabble in it, but it's just, yeah, I've never really gotten into Halo very much. I'm kind of I more lean towards the action adventure. I even sometimes find myself playing a lot of older games. That's just how I am. And I have a short attention span. So sometimes I'll start playing a game and I'll be like, ooh, new shiny game. And I'm going to play that for a while. And then I'll go back to the other one. And so it takes me, I've been playing Guardians of the Galaxy now for like the last 3 weeks. I'm not even done with it yet.
I just grabbed that today, actually.
Oh, did you? And let me guess, you got it for like $25 or something.
I did.
That was kind of, there was two games that I bought. I bought that and Hot Wheels Unleashed, which is actually super fun.
Nice.
Yeah, I bought those two games. And then 2 weeks later, they were cut in half. And I was like, fuck.
Yeah, don't buy this close to Black Friday.
I know. I got to learn my lesson. I think I did that last year, too.
Well, that's part of my problem is I buy most of my games around Black Friday. And so what happens is I just have too many games all at once. And so I end up playing none of them because I can't commit to wanting to start something. Mm-hmm. So I end up just like keep playing WoW or something I can easily fall back into.
Gotcha.
But Halo's been fun. This might be your chance to check it out because it's free. So it's a lot more open to everyone. I'm interested to know how it's going to change because right now it's still technically beta. And there's some huge issues with the progression of the rankings and things like that. But by the time people are hearing this, that the actual full game will be out. And so hopefully they've implemented some changes. But right now it's really tough because, for one, there's like no playlists to choose from. Mm-hmm. It's just ranked or non-ranked. And within that, there's Slayer, there's Capture the Flag, there's Oddball. And you can't just pick one or the other. You can't just go into a lobby that's just Slayer. And on top of that, the progression is terrible. Like, I don't understand how in modern times they make a game with such terrible battle pass progression, because it is not based off of your performance in any way. It's just challenges where it's like, all right, you need to get 3 kills with this gun. It's like, okay, so now I'm spending half the time running around the map trying to find this gun instead of going for kills. And who cares if I capture the flag 3 times, because that counts towards nothing.
Right.
So I just like, whose idea was this? Like, why did that happen? And obviously that's what the whole internet's talking about right now. So hopefully they change that real quick. And people listening to this might be like, yeah, Cameron, they addressed that. So we'll find out.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. Yeah. So it's free to play as of this moment. And if you're done recording, I've got 5 hours to spare. That's my video game playing time this weekend. So I'll check it out. I'll dabble in that a little bit, but
all right.
Yeah, like I said, so Guardians of the Galaxy, I've been going back and forth with Hot Wheels Unleashed. Super, super fun game, and it's so beautiful to look at. The physics are great. The controls are great. Mm. One of the better racing games. Forza Horizon 5.
Yeah.
That one is probably going to end up, next episode, I'm going to tell you what my game of the year is. But it's up there. That is a fucking fantastic entry in the in that series. But the new Mario Party Superstars.
Oh yeah.
So
I got that too.
Those are all in my rotation right now. So obviously I don't have to like quote unquote finish Mario Party by any means, right. But I'm kicking myself because I'm taking way too long with Guardians of the Galaxy, which is just a fun game. Just a fun game. Have you just said you picked it up. You haven't played it yet.
I have not played it yet. Yeah. I grabbed what I grabbed for cheap. Guardians, Assassin's Creed. What's the new one? Valhalla and Deathloop.
Gotcha. So
yeah, I'll get in those soon, but yeah, it's too much to play. I just want to echo real quick what you're saying about Forza. I'm not a racing car game person. I never have been since Need for Speed Underground back on GameCube.
Yeah.
This game is good. Yeah. It is beautiful. I grabbed it on Game Pass, and just that intro where it has you parachuting out of the plane and racing 4 cars, I was hooked. That is like the coolest intro to a game I've ever played.
Yeah, it was. I didn't know what to expect, and it was crazy. Like the first time I played it, I was actually out on the road when I fired it up. It does not translate well over cellular data out on the road. So I had to start over when I got home, and I was like, yeah, it's meant to be played on a big ass screen. Like it's fantastic. So awesome. All right. Cool. Do you want to talk about what are your thoughts on Cyberpunk 2077? I'm just kidding. We don't have to talk about that.
It's like, I haven't got into that yet. I'm waiting for it to be ironed out.
Yeah, it's because it still is not after a year. Okay. So I just, Cyberpunk 2077. That's, if I'm not mistaken, that is up for like role-playing game of the year.
Oh, it is. Did it come out this year?
No, but it must've been like it. No, it came out. Well, did it?
Yeah,
I don't remember. Maybe it was.
I think it was March this year or something. I can't keep track of the dates anymore.
All I know is I bought it. I bought it when it came out. I played it for 2 weeks. I'm like, it's not bad. The version I was playing, which was on the Xbox Series X, was not bad. And it was somewhat glitchy, but not as bad as everybody was making it out to be. But I kind of was like in the protest crowd, so I returned it and got my money back. And then I waited a while. And then I bought it when it was like on sale for $20
about
5 months ago. And it's been sitting on my shelf wrapped up. I'm still waiting for them to fix it. So anyway, Yeah, Cyberpunk 2077. I just can't believe it's nominated for RPG of the Year. That's ridiculous. Anyway, let's get into it. Today's episode, we are talking the top seven video games that are based on television or film.
It's a tough category, for sure.
Oh my God. I have never compiled such a large list to start off with for an episode yet. And then to have to whittle that down was just insanely bad. I mean, it was.
Are you saying there's a lot of good options here?
No.
Okay.
I'm not saying there's a lot of good options. I'm saying that the good options are slim pickings. So to even pick seven was kind of tough. But I mean, just the fact that I started with like upwards of 60, 70 games that I've ever played on this topic, and then to have of course it was easy to check off the ones that were like terribly bad, like A Nightmare on Elm Street and for the NES and shit like that, but or the Street Fighter, the movie, the video game. Cross that fucker off too. Seven. Back to the Future, the game. Back to the Future, the game, is an episodic graphic adventure based on the Back to the Future film franchise. The game was developed and published by Telltale Games as part of a licensing deal with Universal Pictures. Bob Gale, the co-creator, co-writer, and co-producer of the film trilogy, assisted in the game's writing. It was directed by Dennis Leonard, Peter Sakel, Eric Parsons, and Dave Grossman. Man, I love when I get to pronounce American names. Yeah. It was produced by Brett Tosti. Original actors Michael J. Fox and Christopher Lloyd allowed the developers to use their likenesses in the game for the lead characters Marty McFly and Doc Brown, respectively. Although Lloyd reprises his role as Doc, A.G. LoCascio plays the role of Marty. While Fox later appeared to voice two cameo roles in the final episode, reprising his role as future versions of Marty, in addition to playing his forefather, William McFly. The game is split up into five episodes available on multiple gaming platforms. The first episode released for Microsoft Windows and OS X on December 22nd, 2010. PlayStation 3 and iOS versions followed on February 2011. Episodes 2 through 5 were released throughout February to June of 2011, with the final being released June 23rd, 2011. Telltale published the series as retail products for the PS3 and Wii consoles for North America. Deep Silver published the retail PS3 and Wii versions for Europe in May 2012. To commemorate the film's 30th anniversary, Telltale Games released the game on PS4, Xbox 360, and Xbox One in October of 2015. The ports feature updated voice work from Tom Wilson, who played Biff Tannen in the films. In the original release, Biff was voiced by Kid Beyond, whoever the hell that is.
Kid Beyond.
Sounds like name. Sounds like a rapper or something that I've never heard of. What are the pros? Well, it's got fun puzzle solving. Another pro is the story feels like the films, like straight up, with returning and new interesting characters, all of which provide a solid experience that truly feels like Back to the Future. And the music and the audio are on fleek. What are the cons? The animation can be choppy and it does clip at points. The artistic style is a little too cartoonish, with some areas lacking great attention to detail. And the last con is the game feels rather drawn out and slow-paced at times over all the episodes. So those are my thoughts on Back to the Future, the game, coming in at number seven. Cameron,
I've never played this, and when you first said Back to the Future, I immediately assumed it was like a crappy NES game or something. You know, it's like
parts 2 and 3 on one cartridge.
Up until like the 2010s, every movie ever had to have some sort of game port, and they were all terrible for the most part. So I completely forgot this was a game as you brought it up, And it sounds really cool because Telltale is awesome
mm-hmm.
and makes awesome story games. So this sounds really good.
Yeah. If you're familiar with The Walking Dead series that they did, they did a couple of them, mm-hmm. Plus some one-offs like one with Michonne. If you're a fan of those, I mean, you're going to like Back to the Future, especially if you like Back to the Future. I mean,
yeah.
It's a win-win. It is definitely, you know, one of my favorite, obviously, video games based on a film franchise that's done relatively well. What is your number seven today, Cameron?
Funny you should ask. My number seven is Telltale's The Walking Dead. So
perfect.
Yeah. But so this game came out back in 2012, and it's number seven on my list because I never finished it. And if I had finished it, it'd probably be up a little higher. This was the first like big Telltale. I mean, this is what put Telltale on the map. I know they existed right. before that, mm-hmm. but Walking Dead was like their big licensed game that got everyone's attention. Not only because of its, you know, simple point and click adventure gameplay style, but because of how heavy the decisions are in this game, where you are choosing life or death between many characters, and stuff that you do in episode one is going to be on your shoulders throughout the rest of the series. And I'm pretty sure I know how it ends, but I've heard it's just super painful as you make your way through this game, just super invested in all of the characters and just emotionally immersed in this story. So as far as what it's based off of, you know, it's technically based off the Walking Dead TV show, I suppose, because you do or maybe it's more based off the graphic novel than the show. You do run into characters that you will recognize if you've read or seen it. But it is its own original story, which I thought was really good because, again, I guess all Telltale games are very original stories, but this one just stood out for being so unique and being the first one. But other than that, I think that's all I have to say about it. What about you?
Yeah, it's really good. I actually, I was playing them episodically, the original mm-hmm. Walking Dead that introduces Clementine, and when they first came out, and then they were re-released as a package with like every Walking Dead, including the standalone one-offs.
Right.
And I even thought, because my girlfriend has been watching The Walking Dead with me since we met like 8 years ago, I thought, well, because it's episodic and it's kind of like a choose your own adventure. That's kind of what I told her the best mm-hmm. way I described it to her. I'm like, I think you'll probably enjoy watching me replay this because I really wanted to replay it. Unfortunately, she's just not that into video games.
That's tough because that's a very watchable game.
It is a very watchable game. She was surprised at how violent it was at times. And I think she just got bored because a lot of the times too, I did stop and be like, quick, make a decision right there. Look at the screen, go, you know, and mm-hmm. I don't think she could pay attention to that. So she's like, eventually she's like, just pick whatever. yeah, but I do enjoy them. And I think it's kind of a mix. I mean, it's based off of some kind of media, which it does have the style of the graphic novels or the comics or whatever, mm-hmm. however you want to refer them to. But you know, it does like Glenn's in the game and it technically introduces Glenn first. I think it would have been before, if I remember correctly, it was before he would have been introduced in The Walking Dead, show.
Yeah.
I still haven't, having read all the comics and replayed the game, I still somehow have a problem placing those two together, but with the TV show I can. So I liken it to be, you know, kind of based off of both.
Yeah.
But it's still like, yeah, it's super great. Telltale Games just did an awesome job with The Walking Dead. And if anybody out there is interested, Skybound is doing a Clementine comic book So if you want to read the continuing adventures of adult Clementine, those issues come out in 2022. Oh, so I'll just throw cool. that out there. Okay. Yeah, great. Awesome. All right. So let's move along here.
Six.
Who are you going to call? It's Ghostbusters.
Oh, didn't see that coming.
The video game. So Ghostbusters, the video game, it's an action adventure game based on the franchise of the same name, directed by Drew Haworth, and was released on June 16th, 2009. Terminal Reality developed the Windows, PS3, and Xbox 360 versions, while Red Fly Studio developed the PS2 and PlayStation Portable and Wii versions. The game was released after several delays in development and multiple publisher changes. In North America, all versions of the game were published by Atari, believe it or not. While in Europe, the PS2, the PSP, and the PS3 versions were published by Sony Computer Entertainment. A separate game for the Nintendo DS with the same title was developed by Zen Studios and released at the same time, albeit with substantial differences, obviously, in gameplay and story. A remastered version for Microsoft Windows, Nintendo Switch, PS4, and Xbox One was developed by Saber Interactive and published by Mad Dog Games and released just 2 years ago. Many of the principal cast members from the films were involved in the game's production. Each of the actors who portrayed the Ghostbusters in the films, Aykroyd, Ramis, Murray, and Hudson, lent their voices and likenesses to the in-game characters. Aykroyd and Ramis, who wrote the films, also aided in script doctoring for the game, albeit I'm sure they were not high on cocaine when they did it, unlike with the original film. Other film cast members, such as William Atherton, Brian Doyle Murray, and Annie Potts, lent their voices and likenesses to the game's characters as well. Max von Sydow reprises his role as the voice of Viggo the Carpathian. And Ghostbusters, the video game, contains the soundtrack from the original film, along with various characters, locations, and props featured in said film. Indeed, Aykroyd later confessed that the storyline in the game is essentially what the aborted production would have been for, at time, Ghostbusters 3 in 1991. Mm-hmm. So what are the pros in Ghostbusters, the video game? Well, it truly makes you feel like you're a Ghostbuster playing virtually in a Ghostbusters film. The third-person shooter aiming feature felt better than any third-person shooter series at the time of its release. And it's got solid voice acting, visuals, CGI, cutscenes, soundtrack. I mean, it's all top-notch stuff. What are the cons of the game? Well, the actual like lip-syncing of the animated characters looks like way off. it's like watching really bad anime. Gameplay can feel repetitive and uninteresting after a while. And the game is relatively short, even when you're aiming for 100% trophy completion. So, Cameron, have you partaken in Ghostbusters, the video game?
I've not. I remember there being quite a bit of hype about this release when it was announced because of what you said, that this was going to be basically Ghostbusters 3.
Right.
And people were excited that there was so much involvement from the original cast. And I guess just personally, this I just wasn't interested in what I saw here. Because there's already been a perfect Ghostbusters game and it's called Luigi's Mansion. So this wasn't for me.
Gotcha. yeah, Luigi's Mansion is so much more fun. The entire series is so much more fun than Ghostbusters, the video game. But I still have to give it props where props is due, especially when you compare it to other Ghostbusters games. It's definitely up there as one of the better Ghostbusters games to be released. And even the updated version, still not too bad. They didn't like fix a lot of stuff. It just graphically and audio and the audio and everything looks and sounds a little bit better, but
yeah,
other than that, still the same game. Yeah. I mean, you gotta be a real Ghostbusters fan to even give a shit.
Yeah.
So
that's a good point.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't like, I'd seen Ghostbusters, but I wasn't like, oh my gosh, they're finally making a great game that lives up to these movies. Mm-hmm. Just like, oh yeah, I saw those. I liked them.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
wasn't for me.
Well, and just to say to everybody out there, if you haven't played Ghostbusters, the video game, but you've seen Ghostbusters Afterlife, Ghostbusters, the video game is no longer Ghostbusters 3. I wouldn't even say it's canon anymore, so we'll leave it at that. What is your number six, Cameron?
My number six is The Simpsons Road Rage. So The Simpsons has had a great history with video games in general, especially with their Simpsons Brawler arcade game that you can find in any arcade today still, that everyone loved. But Simpsons Road Rage was the first of, I think, two. There's a second one in the series called Hit and Run.
Right.
But it came out in 2001. And basically the premise, Mr. Burns is up to his greedy ways again, purchasing the Springfield Transit Corporation and jacking up the fares. Refusing to shell out the high rates, Springfield citizens are forced into humorous Simpsons Road Rage as they brave commuters jam-packed back routes in the challenge to make enough money to buy back the Transit Corporation before time runs out. No time for donuts, Homer. So basically, this game is Crazy Taxi. Crazy Taxi, a game made by Sega and arcades, where essentially you pick up people and have a little, I guess, GPS arrow on the top of your screen and have to deliver them to their location as quickly as you can to get the most money. And this is all happening in a time limit. So you're just trying to see how many people you can pick up and get to the right place in that amount of time. But it's got this hilarious Simpsons spin on it with just great dialogue and voices and cars that you unlock in different characters. Basically, just about every character and at least every staple of the show, you can drive as them. And I don't know, it's just so funny. You're constantly like just crashing through houses and knocking other cars off the road, trying to get them to their house. And this was just good, chaotic fun. Like I said, it was exactly like Crazy Taxi, to the point where Sega sued Fox and EA and Radical Entertainment, who made it, back in 2003, because they're like, hey, this is the exact same game with Simpsons skins. And that was absolutely correct. So it was settled outside of court for some undisclosed amount. This was just a really good game to play with friends, always trying to compete to see who can get the better scores and faster times around the neighborhood. So I'd say that that's the biggest pro, is just hilarious and pretty addictive gameplay. Con-wise, I don't want to play it at all today. It's the only con I could think of. This was definitely a game of the 2000s, and I don't want it anymore. Gotcha. But at the time, this was a really good game.
Gotcha. Yeah. So brief history. I'm not actually a Simpsons fan, which a lot of people are like, what? How can you not like The Simpsons? I don't dislike it. It just never hit with me. You know, back in the day when it first started, for like the first two or three years, I watched it. Then I got tired of it, and I really haven't watched it since. I've gone back and forth in there, but I used to play the games all the time. Krusty's Funhouse, Bart's Nightmare, of course, the arcade game. So I played all those games when they came out. Bart versus the Space Mutants, I think it was called. I do have the two driving ones, physical copies, and I do have the Simpsons, the video game. And I have them because they came recommended to me. And so when I would go retro game hunting and I would see them, I'd just be, oh, somebody talked about this with me, I'm going to go pick it up.
Yeah.
So I have that one and I have the other one, and I have the game. But I've never played any of them. They're just on my shelf. I guess they look good to some people that come over and be like, hey, all right, you got Simpsons games. Awesome. But I haven't played them. I'm going to have to one of these days. But I'm so busy with everything else. Like I said, short attention span. But yeah, I'll have to play it. So I can't say that I have, and that's solely because I just don't care about The Simpsons.
Honestly. No, I understand. I don't like The Simpsons either, but I know enough about it to appreciate this game. But same here. I was more of a family guy.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Same here. It's not as good as it used to be, but
it's been going on far too long, just like The Simpsons.
Yeah.
What the hell is wrong with you?
I had The Simpsons. I'm going to just kind of spoiler territory here. I had The Simpsons in my top 10, the arcade game, it didn't quite make it, unfortunately.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. So I know everybody's like, well, then, Paul, what's your number 5?
That's what I'm wondering.
5.
Well, you're all going to find out right now. Tron.
Tron.
Yeah. And I'm really pissed right now, too, actually. So before I get into the game, let me tell you why I'm pissed.
All right.
So I have 3 cabinets that are my dream cabinets to own. Tron is one of them. And then I have a couple of dream pinball machines as well that I like to own. Well, I don't have money to throw around. So when Arcade 1UP announced that a Tron cabinet was coming out, I'm like, bam, pre-order.
Yeah.
So as of this recording, I was supposed to be enjoying my second full day of my Tron cabinet. However, FedEx is a fucking piece of shit.
Oh, no.
I was supposed to receive it the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, and I planned on doing an unboxing and a build and a review, a whole video and everything. I was going to shoot everything and then enjoy it over Thanksgiving break. They never loaded it on the truck that Wednesday.
Oof.
So then the delivery was updated to Friday. Okay, well, I'm going to get Friday. I'll still enjoy it for a couple more days. And I was walking my dog like around lunchtime or something like that. And I'm like, oh, the FedEx truck is right at the end of the street. Here it comes. You know, I see it. It's stopping. It's turning on signals. Oh, okay. It's stopping at another house across from the school at the end of the street. Okay. It's going to come up my street. Nope. It's leaving town.
Oh, no.
It never showed up on Friday. And I live in a small town. For them to send multiple trucks out to like my area would have been, is just, it's dumb. So I have a feeling that was the truck and it was on the truck and he just didn't deliver it. So they have until like 8 o'clock, I guess, to deliver. However, at 6 o'clock, it's changed. The status changed that it was going to be delivered on Monday. Well, they're also supposed to deliver on weekends. So yeah. At this point I'm like fuming. So I, fortunately, I'm not enjoying my Tron Arcade 1UP cabinet right now. And I changed it to a FedEx pickup so I can pick it up. I don't know how that's going to change the Monday date now. But yeah, I'm not a happy camper. But
shoot.
Now I just got to get through this talking about Tron being number 5 for me. So Tron is a coin-operated arcade video game from Bill Adams and was manufactured and distributed by Bally Midway in August of 1982. It's based on the Disney, Walt Disney Productions motion picture Tron, released that same year. The game consists of 4 subgames inspired by the events of the science fiction film. It features some characters and equipment seen in the film, like the light cycles, battle tanks, and the input-output tower. The game earned more than the film's initial release, and it was a hit, earning Best Coin-Op Game of the Year from Electronic Games Magazine. In 1983, Midway released a sequel called Discs of Tron, which is also supposed to be on that cabinet, by the way, which was inspired by the disc-throwing combat sequence of the film. Another sequel followed in 2003 with computer game Tron 2.0. On January 10th, 2008, the game was released for Xbox Live Arcade, ported from Digital Eclipse and branded by Disney Interactive Studios. In 2010, the film Tron Legacy, the arcade game, makes a brief appearance, but is displayed as being manufactured and distributed by the in-universe game Encom International instead of Bally Midway. What are the pros of Tron? Well, it just, in my opinion, the cabinet and the gameplay, the visuals just look, and the audio sounds cool, respectively. The controls are a lot of fun. And it can be challenging, but it's fair. It's a fair challenge. The goals are achievable. The cons, there's just not much depth. Think the 4 levels of Donkey Kong, and then they're just repeated.
Right.
And it follows, which is a basic formula for the arcades at the time. You just have these repeating levels that just increase in difficulty, and some of that are just going to find it boring and repetitive. So that's Tron. Number 5 on my list.
That sounds pretty good. I've never even seen that, though, in an arcade, which is surprising because there's quite a few I try to frequent.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but that sounds cool, though.
I kind of feel like that should be a staple in every arcade. There's only two arcades near me. There is, about an hour and a half south, is the world-famous Galloping Ghost in the suburbs of Chicago. Where, I mean, if it was an arcade game, they've got it. If it was an arcade game that you never heard of, they've got it. they even opened up a second location just for pinball machines. So,
oh wow,
yeah, right down the street. It's crazy. And then we've got one locally, probably about 20 minutes away from here. They've got Tron there as well. So, and I saw Tron at the Midwest Gaming Expo. So it seems like it should be just par for the course that an arcade should have it. So for you to say that the arcades you've been to, are they free play arcades or are they pay to play?
Yeah, they are.
They are? That's weird. Yeah. That's weird that they don't have a Tron. Do they have a Dragon's Lair?
Yes.
Yeah, see, it should be like hand in hand, Tron and Dragon's Lair. they got to be in an arcade. But yeah, so that's just my opinion, though. You can email me at potationrotation@gmail.com if you have a problem with anything that I say. So, all right. So should we move along?
Yeah, sure. What's your number? I've got nothing to say about Tron.
Okay. That's too bad. You're not coming back. What's number five?
Well, my number five is, I'm going broad here.
Okay.
And I'm talking about the Lego games, kind of in general, but in particular, Lego Star Wars. And Lego Harry Potter. So, the Lego games, everyone knows of these. They've been a staple for a while of basically licensed movie games. And there's a lot of them. But it kind of all started with Star Wars back in 2005. And so, Lego put out this game of the original, or not the original, the prequel trilogy. And it was just simple platforming, slashing with lightsabers, using the Force to solve puzzles, and just finding collectibles hidden all over. And you could unlock other Jedi and random characters to play through this with. And it was just so fun. But on top of that, it was hilarious. I assume the humor still holds up, but it plays through basically a Lego interpretation of the storylines with no dialogue. They just like hilariously kind of pantomime what is basically happening. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of overacting with these Lego characters and just like really funny things happening. Like, I don't know if this is actually in the game, but let's say, for example, they go to pull out their lightsabers, and then someone will accidentally pull out a banana instead of a lightsaber. And it's just this silly visual humor. And on top of that, it uses the licenses really well, especially because it still has the music. So we've got all of the wonderful John Williams music, both with Star Wars and with Harry Potter. John Williams did a beautiful job, of course, but they're just these fun couch co-op games where anyone can easily hop in. It's not difficult too much, and just have a good time exploring levels and griefing each other if you can. Mm-hmm. But funny enough, well, I don't know if this isn't funny, actually. Don't know why I said that. Lego Star Wars is generally what people think of when it comes to the first licensed Lego game. But actually, the first licensed Lego game was called Lego Creator Harry Potter, back in 2001. And the Lego Creator series of games was basically just you built little virtual environments. It wasn't much of an actual gameplay game. But that first one, you got to build little Harry Potter environments. And so that was technically their first licensed one. Mm-hmm. Star Wars, Harry Potter, Lego games, they're all great. I'm disappointed the further they went on, they actually started bringing in the actual dialogue from the movies. And it's just not as funny. It's not as good with the actual dialogue. What do you think?
I'm going to agree with you. I haven't played like every single game in a series, but I have played Lego Indiana Jones, like Star Wars, one of the Lego Harry Potters, some kind of, you know, one of the Marvel games, one of the DC games. I've played at least one from every series that they release. And they were fun enough that actually at one point then I'm like, well, maybe the mother load that I need to really consider is Lego Dimensions.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, which I did have. And I started buying, like, I actually, the day it came out, I went to Best Buy. I bought that and every single little mini Lego set that you collect, you build, and you scan into the game that was available. And like right off the bat, that was like, I must have spent like $400 between the game and all the little Lego sets like that were out for it already. And over time, probably about 4 or 5 months, I'd pick and choose what I was going to buy. And I'm like, whoa, this is really becoming expensive. Like, yeah. I already buy Legos and I have some Legos in my game room and at work on my desk. So I'm a Lego fan. I love Legos. Just went to the Lego store and was about to drop $250 on an Ecto-1. And I'm like, I really, really don't need to add that to my credit card right now. So I walked out. It took a lot, but I walked out with nothing. But the Lego games, they are great. And a lot of people maybe chalk them up to like kid games, but you know what? Mm-hmm. There's adult humor in there. There's humor in there that you're only going to get as an adult, you know, and it's great. It's not just for kids, it's for adults. And you know what? If you like a certain franchise and Lego puts it out there, I do suggest giving it a shot. Mm-hmm. Lego Dimensions, as fun as it is, can be an expensive hobby of a game. So I would say probably pass on that one, but you know, you can get some good Lego games out there now. Some of them are even collected, if I'm not mistaken. Like some of the Star Wars, you can get like 3 episodes on one disc now or something. Right. Yeah. So
yeah, they're about to come out with the full Skywalker saga.
Oh, are they?
They basically remade them all from the ground up, so they're not the same games that originally came out.
That sounds tasty.
And it looks incredible. Like graphic wise, looks so pretty.
I don't think I've known this.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to look into this.
It's going to be great, I'm sure. But again, the modern ones use actual dialogue from the movies, and I don't like that.
Yeah.
They got to mime them out.
Yeah.
But oh well. I mean, I haven't played a Lego game in a while. I've got the Harry Potter one on my Switch, thinking my wife and I would play it sometime. Because we played through like the first 3 books back when we were dating and thought maybe we'll play it again sometime. Just haven't got back to it.
Got you. Yeah, no, that's a good choice. And unfortunately, Lego game didn't make my list. But they're really good. They're really fun. So Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the arcade game. Now, I preface by saying the arcade game. I'm not saying Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles to the arcade game. Like, this is legitimate, the arcade game. Mm-hmm. Okay. So yeah. I just want to preface that. So this game was also called Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles in Europe and Super Kami Ninja in Japan. It was a beat-em-up arcade game released by Konami in October of 1989. The game's content is centered primarily around the first season of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoon series, with several key exceptions. The Turtles game supported 4 players in its original arcade incarnation, although most ports reduced the amount of players to 2. An alternate 2-player arcade cabinet was also produced, but is less common, and allowed players to select their turtle instead of relegating character selections to a specific joystick choice. The arcade game was a worldwide hit, becoming the highest-grossing dedicated arcade game of 1990 in the U.S. and Konami's highest-grossing arcade game of all time. Versions for various home systems soon followed, including the NES system's TMNT 2, as I said. This is not about that. Also, it was called TMNT 2 because NES already had a rather disappointing TNT game that I rage internally about. Just thinking about it, I just, no thank you. And the sequel, Turtles in Time, was released in 1991. The pros for TMNT, the arcade game, it's just overall an awesome side-scrolling co-op. It's got radical graphics and animations, tubular soundtrack and audio, and gnarly boss fights. Catch what I did there?
Oh, yeah.
The cons. I couldn't find 80s references for bad words that were opposite of awesome, radical, tubular, and gnarly. So I'll just say the levels are somewhat easy. The enemies are predictable. And the side-scrolling at the time can be jerky with some clipping, which is, well, actually, it's totally bogus. There we go. I just thought of one. So, yeah, TMNT, the arcade game, is number 4 on my list today.
So I've played this not extensively. Basically, anytime I'm at an arcade with some friends and it's open, you're like, hey, yeah, let's go play some of that. But again, never in depth. But I know it is regarded as one of the best brawlers, kind of the ones that set it all off. And, you know, that and The Simpsons, but has kind of paved the way for brawlers to come because of that. And I appreciate it for what it did for the genre, for sure.
Right. Yeah. You know, up until then, I mean, there are a lot of games that I pumped a lot of quarters in as a kid. Tron. Dragon's Lair. Don't get me started on Dragon's Lair. Paperboy. Some, even the original is Pac-Man, Donkey Kong. There's just a lot of games that I pumped quarters into. Narc, another one of my favorites. But it wasn't until TMNT came out that I actually would actually go with like a couple rolls of quarters with the sole intention that I was not leaving that game until I actually beat it.
Ooh.
That was the first arcade game I beat. Like, I wanted to play it to the end. So it has a special place in my heart. Just having that, being up on that pedestal, that it's the first game that I didn't have, you know, like rage quitting, you know, issues with right. playing like with Dragon's Lair. Where I was just like, as a kid, I'm like, fuck this shit, you know? Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just, it's to me, it's one of the better side scrolling beat 'em up arcade games, but not number one.
Castle Crashers.
Castle Crashers. That sounds familiar.
Have you not played that?
Why does that sound familiar? Describe it a little bit. I might have played it.
So it's a brawler, came out on Xbox Live Arcade. It's on quite a few things now, but you play as these four little knights, like red, green, orange, blue, and just make your way from left to right, killing enemies using magic and axes, and it's really funny.
I
don't know what else to tell you. It's made by, was it the Behemoth? I think same one that made Alien Hominid.
Oh, okay.
A few of very, very quirky little arcade games.
Gotcha. Yeah, I know that one. Castle Crashers sounded familiar, but maybe I was thinking of something else. Maybe I'm thinking of Crystal Castles. That's no probably what's screwing me up here. I'm sure that's what's coming to mind because I just said it. yeah, Castle Crashers. I'll look into that. I've never heard of that. So I should be able to find that on Xbox, you said?
Yeah.
Okay. Is it free?
No.
Damn it.
I doubt it. I'm sure it's cheap at this point. It's a really old game.
Okay. All right. I'm just going to put a dollar sign next to it so I know. Okay. All right. So what is your number four today?
So my number four, I'm curious if this is controversial or not. Is Batman Arkham Asylum. Is it controversial because Batman's based off a comic book and not a TV series? But then again, Walking Dead, same deal.
Based
off. But for the sake of things, it does use Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill as voicing the Batman and Joker, and they are from the TV series. So it is based off the series, I'll say.
Okay.
So this game is incredible. I feel like up until then, superhero games were so hit or miss, with a lot of them missing. And especially Batman. There hadn't really been a great Batman game made. And they came along, Rocksteady, making this stealth slash brawler with a bit of a Metroidvania mixed in. And you are Batman, who's been trapped in Arkham Asylum by the Joker. And Joker releases all the, you know, the common Batman enemies that we know and love within the asylum. So you make your way through there. All the while, Joker is concocting this drug called Titan that makes people basically into Hulks. It's like a mutation of the venom that Bane uses. The best part about, actually, there's so much good stuff about this game. It's hard to know where to start. But my favorite is the stealth. The feeling of being Batman in this game, of grappling from gargoyle to gargoyle, like perching up above these enemies as they like sneak around, well, looking for you, and you just drop down, tie them up, or take them down in different ways. And you can go back and replay the missions and get a better score based off of how stealthy you were and things like that. On top of that, it had a really good and simple, but this brawling combat system of just like attacks and counters and combos, essentially, as you try to get your combos as high as you possibly can as you take out waves of enemies. And there wasn't anything like it before this. It was just very tight gameplay, very fun to play. And it ended up making quite a bit of sequels, I know, with like Arkham City, Arkham Knight. And then is there a fourth one?
Do you know? I don't know how many there ended up being. I think there is four. That does sound...
Yes.
Right.
Because one of them ended up being a prequel. I think that was Arkham Knight.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember. But they're great. That's... What do you think? What's your experience here?
Well, first of all, controversial. You found a good loophole. One loophole that was actually... So, back... the first one was actually originally on my list. I don't remember where it was. It was somewhere in the teens, so I don't think it would have made its way up. But I looked at it, and I'm like... Do I count it or not? I'm kind of looking at this as it's more comic book, but yeah, it uses the voice from the, I'm like, I can't do it, but you did it.
So I did it.
So congratulations. I enjoyed my time with the first two games. After that, I want to say I bought one more, but I don't know which one it would have been. Without looking it up, I'd have to look it up. And it sat, and I ended up selling it, I think, or something. I think I was done after the second one. Again, my short attention span, I think I just wanted to move on to another series. It was good enough for me to at least be a contender to make the show. I just also don't remember it very well.
Yeah. It's been a while, 2009, and I haven't played it since then.
Right, right. But it does still, to this day, hold a place in my heart as a very good Batman game. I'd put it right up there with the recent Spider-Man games that where it just took a while and then bam. There they were for Batman. And I don't know that there's the, what's the one coming out? I think,
Gotham Knights.
That's what I was thinking of. So it's got me kind of reinvested in Batman again, that hopefully it's a good game. But it's not an asylum game. Like I said, I think I was just tired after the second one and I didn't want to revisit that franchise.
Yeah.
Or that series, I should say. So I'm kind of hoping that this new one is going to be good. I'm praying. I think that there's, you know, like I said, with the Spider-Man games and now with Guardians of the Galaxy, which is surprisingly good. I think that superhero games are starting to be done better than they ever have been in history. So I'm still waiting for a really goddamn good Superman game. I don't know if that's ever going to happen.
Unlikely.
Yeah. I don't know. But yeah, the Arkham series, it's definitely a good series. Definitely one of the best Batman series out there, whether it belongs on this list or not. You did it. You stuck it in there, Cameron.
Hey, this isn't my show. I'll put whatever I want on this list. You can't stop me.
You're goddamn right. I can't. I could edit this whole thing out, though.
Oh, so no.
Take that. All right. Oh, shit. This is it. We are more than halfway through with our list today.
For reasons too disturbing to mention, I find that hot.
DuckTales. Ironically, this game also fell at number 3 on my list of top 7 NES games of all time. So going all the way back to episode 1 of this podcast. Yes. Yeah. So young and so naive I was 5 months back, literally ages ago. I wasn't even wearing protection. That's how bad it was back then. Anyway, DuckTales.
What is that joke? What are you implying?
Let your mind wander.
All right.
You can decide for yourself what that meant. DuckTales. Let's get into it. It is a video game based on the Disney animated TV series of the same name. It was first released in the U.S. for Nintendo Entertainment System by Capcom in September 1989, then in Japan in January 1990, and in Europe, December 1990. It was produced by Takiro Fujiwara, David Mullock, and Darlene Waddington. The game was designed by Yoshinori Takenaka, and the game provides a good example of the work produced by Capcom in the late 1980s and early 1990s, along with such titles as those in the Mega Man franchise. Both shared key personnel as well, such as Takiro Fujiwara, Kaiji Inafune, and Yoshihiro Sakaguchi. I don't have to think about it anymore. The game was released on the Wii Virtual Console in North America, November 19th, 2006, Japan on December 2nd, 2006, and the PAL regions in December of 2006. And if you finish the game with $10 million or more and the 2 hidden treasures, you get an alternate ending. You can also get another much harder alternate ending, by the way, by not collecting anything, not a single penny. Good luck. The pros. It's a fun and easy game with easy gameplay controls at the time. Didn't get much simpler than 2 buttons. It's a great game in its design from start to finish, including the nonlinear aspect, and the graphics are colorful with nice sprite work that actually still kind of hold up to this day.
True.
The cons, it's short and it's not really complex or challenging like the Mega Man games of the time. So that's DuckTales again, making a list twice for me at number 3.
I know nothing about DuckTales. I think I watched the show when I was young, but I've never played the game.
Never played the game. Interesting. Okay, so then I guess you got no thoughts on it.
No thoughts. No ducking thoughts.
No ducking thoughts, he says. Excellent. Well, then why don't we just go ahead and get into your number 3, and I'll see if I have any ducking thoughts on that one.
Oh, we'll see. Number 3 is going to be very controversial because it's not based off a movie. It's not based off of a cartoon or a comic book. It's based off of a commercial. We're talking about Big Bumpin'. One of the 3 games released by Burger King on the 360 in 2006.
Okay, so I thought for a second there you're gonna say Yonoid. I was gonna be like, you are done.
Yonoid, how old do you think I am? No one knows who the Noid is.
He just made a comeback this year.
Yeah, but no one has commercials. Everyone streams everything. I'm just giving you a hard time.
Man, anyway. That sucks now. I didn't even think about commercials, man. You just opened up a whole can of worms on this one because I could have thrown in that Spot 7-Up game, which I fucking loved.
Ooh.
Playing that on the Genesis.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Fuck. I'm rewriting my list. Go ahead.
Oh boy. All right. So back in 2006, Burger King teamed up with Blitz Games, published by King Games. They made these three games that were released on the Xbox Live Arcade. It was Pocket Bike Racer, which you played as the king. You could play as Whopper Jr. You could play as this chicken. You could play as a few just like default guys with helmets. And you would run through these little racetracks just on little pocket crotch rockets. And they looked hilarious. That was not my favorite one. They also released Sneak King, which was ridiculous and actually got really hard, where you played as the king. And you would have these missions in these weird environments, like it'd be a neighborhood cul-de-sac, it'd be a construction site, and you'd have to sneak up behind people and deliver their value meals to them and surprise them. That was the thing. You had to surprise them, and you'd do like a flourish, like a cool spin or something when if they're well surprised. But it was really hard to dodge their line of sight in some of them. So the other levels got tough. But number one for me, and it was like the highest ranked out of all three games just on the internet in general, is Big Bumpin'. And Big Bumpin' is a bumper car game featuring all those same characters. And there's a few different challenges you can do. Some are kind of like, I guess the only thing I can think of is like Juggernaut from Halo. But like you're it and you're trying to stay it the whole time. Oh, no, I'm wrong. There's a puck, like a hockey puck on it. And whoever touches it last, it becomes their color. And so you're trying to keep that puck away from everyone as long as you can. There's some that are just straight up like sumos where you're trying to knock everyone off the ledge. But then probably the most intense, at least in my friend group, was just the hockey version, like 2v2 playing hockey, trying to hit a puck into the other person's goal. Power-ups are coming up. It's like these games are like super cheap and they don't look that high of quality, but they surprisingly are. Like there's not a ton of depth, but you will have a lot of fun. And they ended up being such a hit and people were so surprised at how great these games were that they moved it off of Xbox Live and then sold physical copies in Burger King for only $3.99 with a purchase of a meal. So you bought a meal, $3.99 got you a game. And I remember seeing these in Burger King, but I didn't have a 360 at the time, so I didn't think much of it. But other than like, what? There's a game with the Burger King on it? What is Sneak King? That seems so weird. And so just slowly through like high school and college, my friends, we picked up all three of these games and would play them whenever we hung out. And Big Bumpin' is some of the best like white knuckle action yelling at each other time I've ever, like better than Mario Party. Just great chaos. If you ever are going through like a secondhand game store and see one of these games, especially Big Bumpin', grab it. You will not regret it.
Okay. Yeah. So for once I have no history with this game whatsoever. It was one that I've heard of along with Sneak King. Sneak King is actually one of my favorite guilty pleasures. I do love me a good, yeah, with the flourishes and every, I mean, it's a guilty pleasure. I'm not going to lie. And if you know what, I don't know how many games exist that are based off of like commercials or those type of IPs or whatever, but man, I wonder if I can do an entire episode on shit like that, because that Cool Spot, Yonoid, I don't know, but yeah, Sneaking, but I've never, yeah, that one, I've never picked that one up. Never played it. never watched game footage of it, so I have nothing I can share on that one other than I'm going to have to check it out if I can find it somewhere at this point.
Hopefully. It's definitely, you need like three friends to play it. At max enjoyment.
Oh, I don't have any friends.
Oh, shoot.
What am I going to do?
I don't know. I doubt the online still works, so I can't play with you.
Yeah. No, I've got friends. So I'm just kidding. All right, so moving right along.
Two.
GoldenEye 007.
I wondered where this would show up.
GoldenEye 007, sometimes called GoldenEye 64, is a first-person shooter developed by Rare and published by Nintendo for the Nintendo 64. It was released in August 1997 and is based upon the 1995 James Bond film GoldenEye. It was directed by Martin Hollis, who had previously worked as a programmer on the coin-op version of Killer Instinct. It was primarily inspired by Sega's Virtua Cop and was to be a rail shooter before being redesigned as a free-roaming shooter. Mm-hmm. Retrospectively, GoldenEye 007 is considered an important game in the history of first-person shooters for demonstrating the viability of game consoles as platforms for the genre and for signaling a transition from the then-standard Doom-like approach to a more realistic style. It pioneered features such as atmospheric single-player missions, stealth elements, and a console multiplayer deathmatch mode, which that's where it's at, to be honest with you. The game is frequently cited as one of the greatest video games of all time, with many of its gameplay elements, such as the clob gun, having left an enduring impression in video game culture. It did have a spiritual successor called Perfect Dark, another good series released in 2000. A reimagining of the game, also titled GoldenEye 007, was released in 2010. Basically, you got three modes. The first mode is single player, where you control James Bond and complete missions roughly based on the movie story. There's a variety of weapons in the game, such as knives, pistols, rifles, and whatnot. And to complete missions, you must complete all objectives that are given when you select a mission. Examples include killing a specific enemy, retrieving documents, and rescuing hostages. Usually, the number of objectives increase when you select harder difficulties. The second mode is multiplayer, and here you just play with yourself and your friends, four characters, up to four people in total, in different areas, and you just you can choose five different scenarios. Normal, you only live twice, the Living Daylights, the Man with the Golden Gun, License to Kill, and then there's team scenarios where you got 2 versus 2, 3 versus 1, 2 versus 1. And the third mode is called cheat options. And that's where you get to use cheats in the single player mode. A cheat is unlocked when you beat a mission quickly or when you beat a mission on a certain difficulty level. Some of the cheats include DK mode, infinite ammo, all weapons, paintball mode, and whichever mode you pick, just pick it and get to shooting that shit. What are the pros of GoldenEye 007? The multiplayer is super fun. And like I said earlier, that's literally where it's at. It's a good party game. I stress, at the time, the graphics were great with realistic and detailed environments and animations. Nowadays, doesn't hold up so much very well. So that's kind of a con already that I'm kind of leading into. But more pros, being able to be stealthy and intelligent in both single and multiplayer modes. The freedom of the game, the nonlinear aspect, being able to choose single player directives. And it's got baby butt smooth controls. Now, what are the cons? Aside from the graphics holding up today, which they don't, cursor targeting can be difficult for some people to grasp. And that's really my only cons for GoldenEye 007.
GoldenEye, obviously, yeah, that's like the staple everyone goes to for, like, you know, the best N64 multiplayer out there. I unfortunately never really got into it because I was not allowed to play it at the time. What year did this come out?
What? Are you serious?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Well, I was in elementary school.
1997.
So I was 6 and
shit.
My mom did not let me play this game. I had a friend who brought it over a couple times, and then after she saw all the blood dripping down the screen, she's like, "Yeah, you can't play that anymore."
It wasn't even realistic. It was fucking Nintendo blood. Whatever.
Yeah, which was the most realistic at the time, therefore very realistic. But anyway, I have had experience with it and have played it a few times since. But the problem is I'd only played it much longer after the fact, after it had been a hit. So it never really caught on for me. I had a roommate in college who always wanted to play it. But whenever we played, he'd play on one level that he knew really well. He'd turn it to all like bombs, set motion sensors everywhere, sit in a corner, and then just watch our screens and blow us up. And he'd be like, oh, why do you never want to play with me? It's like, because this is not fun whatsoever. And that was most of my experience with the game. And then actually just this past summer, I think I finally watched the movie because I'd seen Die Another Day. Mm-hmm. And Die Another Day is super campy and stupid. But I enjoyed it because I did see that when I was younger. So it resonated with me how stupid it was.
Right.
GoldenEye is not campy whatsoever. Mm-mm. It's too serious and honestly bored the heck out of me. I was like, oh, this is the game that, or this is the movie that this hit game is based off of? Like, I don't understand the connection whatsoever. And it really just comes down to how tight the multiplayer and the gunplay were. That's what stood out to everyone.
Gotcha. Yeah, I would argue that if you're introduced to GoldenEye even 5 years after it came out, the game, that, you know, at that point, it's already starting to show its age.
Mm-hmm.
And I would completely agree that if you were already used to playing much better, I guess, graphically, let's just use graphically, for example, because that's what this game worked. It's just not good right now. If you were playing much better games, even graphically, and then you go back and you play something like GoldenEye, you're going to be like, what was everybody talking about? Like,
yeah, where's the hype? Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, right. So, but you know, I mean, for somebody like me who was 20 at the time, you youngins.
Yep.
yeah. I guess I can give you a pass that, you know, you go back to something like that and you're just like, yeah, I don't get it. But yeah, at the time it was fantastic. And at the time too, I guess as well. And I suppose there's an argument to be had that if you were to fire it up now with four people that have never played it before, or up to four people, I mean, mm-hmm. you're all on equal level. And it was like that back then too. Like when it first came out, everybody's playing it. You're playing it with all your friends and everybody's having a good time. But like now, like I got a friend that's not big into video games. And every now and then he comes over and I do force him to play something. So if mm-hmm. I ever like fire that up, like he'll remember it. He'll remember, oh yeah, GoldenEye 007. I haven't played this in, you know, 25 years or whatever. But I would kick his ass. Like there's no if, ands, or buts about it. Kind of like, so yeah. But I still like it. And I actually did like the film, but you're also talking to a guy whose favorite James Bond was Roger Moore. And not a lot of people say that either. So
yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Live and Let Die and A View to Kill are like my two favorite Bond movies. And then GoldenEye is actually third. So, yeah, I'm kind of really weird on Bond. I actually saw the first, who's been the new Bond?
Daniel Craig.
Yeah. Daniel Craig. I saw his first one that he was in. I left halfway through it. I didn't enjoy it and haven't watched a Bond movie since. So nothing against Daniel Craig. I've seen his other works. I just don't like him as Bond. I just don't like that iteration of James Bond.
Yeah, so. I'll agree with you there. I have not enjoyed his movies. I know we might be in the minority there. Some people really love him and think he's the best Bond ever.
Mm-hmm.
I think he is so dry and mm-hmm. boring and just cookie cutter character that I don't understand.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm surprised he lasted this long. I'm surprised he did the most recent one after I thought he had quit, but
yeah,
we could do a whole episode on James Bond, but let's move on to your number two. on your list.
Cool. So my number two, going back to the superhero games, Spider-Man 2. So, Spider-Man 2, I understand how you could, you had your thoughts about Batman, whether or not to put him on the list, but the Spider-Man 2 game is based off the Spider-Man 2 movie.
Right.
I guess kind of, because it throws in so much fluff that is not in the movie. There's like a bunch of villains, aren't like Rhino, Vulture, Shocker, Mysterio. They all have arcs in the game. Mm-hmm. Not in the movie whatsoever, but it does follow the general arc with Doc Ock as you go through that. But this came out in 2004. There had been a Spider-Man before this for the first Spider-Man movie, and then older games before that as well. But the first Spider-Man one, it had you just like infinitely swinging through the sky above buildings. You're grappling onto nothing. You're just shooting webs out into the sky. And it was very like straightforward missions. Not that great. Spider-Man 2 was the first one to where you had all of New York to start freely swinging through and doing missions. It is like almost identical gameplay wise to what the modern Spider-Man games are. So if you've played the Insomniac ones on your PS4 or 5 and loved those, you can thank Spider-Man 2 back from 2004. This really got those going and was so much fun. But anyway, this was developed by Treyarch, published by Activision. And have you played this game?
No.
Okay.
So here we go. I played the first one. I wasn't a fan. I know I didn't finish it. I barely remember it, except that it just was crap to me. Mm-hmm. And so I just never picked up another Spider-Man game until Insomniacs. So it surprises me to learn that Spider-Man 2 actually got the swing mechanics right.
Uh-huh. It's like,
from what I understand,
literally they're saying the same game, just different graphics. Bad graphics.
Interesting.
It's crazy how good this was. And the fact that they pulled this off on GameCube is what I played it on. Sure, there's a lot more fog in the distance than there is on the PS4.
Right.
Understand. But mechanically, it's the same. And it's a lot of fun. Sure, there's a lot of crappy side missions of just like delivering pizza and things like that, where even the new ones kind of got bogged down with some boring side content. But still, for 2004, there was nothing like it. And I can't believe it took them. Well, I guess it didn't take them that long. There had been other sequels that followed the same principle. There was the Ultimate Spider-Man, which was very similar, and it was cel-shaded. So it looked really good and probably still looks just as good today. Mm-hmm. And that one, same mechanics, but then had like a bunch of different unlockable suits. And I think you could even play as Venom in that game.
Huh.
Spider-Man 3, which came out in the time of the Wii. It had some differences on the Wii. That I remember I rented it on that. And being the Wii, it has to have a stupid motion-sensitive gimmick. So you actually had to like fling your hands to sling web as you were going through the city, which got pretty annoying. But still, that's all I wanted. I just wanted to roam the city. Sometimes I still do that. I'll boot up Miles Morales and just have fun swinging around, beating people up.
Yeah, I'm looking online because I'm still actually growing my GameCube collection. I'm still looking for some. Looks like you can pick this up used for around $15. So that's not a bad price. And I might have to be on the lookout for it if I can find it for $15 around these parts. I tend to look, at my local stores first. I'd rather, shop and support locally before I buy them from some rando off of eBay or something. So, All right, I'm going to have to take a look at that one. Add that to my list as well of suggestions. Spider-Man 2. I'm kind of surprised, honestly. Well, I mean, okay. So let me ask you though. So if it's basically, if the first Insomniac Spider-Man is basically the same game, but overhauled. Is it worth me playing Spider-Man 2 or no?
No. It'd only be worth playing just for the sake of, I guess, nostalgia for me, but for you to just, I guess, to see the similarities, to see what I'm saying is true, but realistically, no, there's no reason for you to play it.
Okay. So it's kind of like the whole thing with like GoldenEye. So you play a better version of us in shooter and you go back to GoldenEye. It really made no sense to go back to try playing GoldenEye because it's kind of like,
yeah. Yeah, like that's the close enough analogy. But like control wise, I'd say it's very similar. While GoldenEye does not compare to a twin stick shooter.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. If I can do my math correctly.
Yes. Number one.
I was in finance at one point, but we're finally here.
Christ, it's about time.
We are reaching number one, and I've got a couple sips left of my wine. So I've been pacing it out very well. It's not as cold as it should be, which is kind of ugh.
I finished my drink on game six, probably.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Damn, that you need to have like two or three drinks for these episodes, man.
Hey, I still got errands to run after this.
Oh, okay. All right, I'll give you a pass.
One.
From 1984, E.T. the Extraterrestrial.
Oh, no, it's not. do you go digging through a dump in New Mexico?
I can't put one by you, Cameron. Not at all. No, it's not. Of course it's not. Jesus Christ. Do you think I'm that bad? Come on. No, it's actually Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Turtles in Time.
Okay.
So that one was released as Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles, Turtles in Time in Europe. I mean, you can just, you know, there's a lot of stuff that you can just take from the first one and just plug away into here. Side scrolling, Konami, beat 'em up. March 1991 is when it was released. It was the sequel to the 89 arcade hit that, again, like I said, was number four, but with improved gameplay, graphics, and sound. Turtles in Time was later ported to the Super Famicom in July 1992 and the Super Nintendo in North America in August of 1992 and in Europe, November of that same year. And if you listeners recall, in episode four of this podcast, discussing my top seven personal gaming moments, I have a nice little story about this title at number five. You should have a listen to. So don't do it now. Just finish. I don't have much longer to go. Just finish this one and then go back. Anyway, it was retitled with the Roman numeral four in North America and Europe and Australia to serve as a sequel to Teenage Mutant Turtles 3, The Manhattan Project. That same year, a game that borrowed many elements, Teenage Mutant Turtles, The Hyperstone Heist, was released for the Mega Drive / Sega Genesis. And if you haven't played any of those titles, you must, especially Hyperstone Heist. It's a very good game. Regarding the arcade game, though, like the original, Turtles in Time was released for the arcades as a dedicated four-player cabinet, as well as a two-player conversion kit. Unlike the first game, though, Turtles in Time never officially distributed was distributed in Japan in the arcades out there. Years later, the arcade version of Turtles in Time was revisited on newer consoles. Slightly altered version of the arcade game was included as an unlockable bonus in the GameCube, PS2, and Xbox versions of TMNT3, Mutant Nightmare from 2005. In August 2009, Ubisoft released a downloadable 3D remake of the game, Teenage Mutant Turtles, Turtles in Time reshelled for the Xbox Live Arcade. The remake was released onto the PS3 PlayStation Network in September 2009. You guide the Turtles through a series of levels, starting out in the streets of New York City before being transported to levels representing various historical eras. In each level, players face enemies from the 1987 cartoon, including foot soldiers, stone warriors, and also it features Toka and Razar from the film Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, The Secret of the Ooze, as end-level bosses. So really, this title itself is pulling from both television and film. But we need to talk about the differences real quick here between the arcade and the home ports. Because for what the NES lacked in graphics, effects, and sound, they would make up for in extra content. So technically speaking, this title itself being at number one, I'm recognizing both the arcade and the SNES version because they both equally have things that present the gamer with different ways of playing that for me kind of balance each other out. And so I can't just pick one over the other. They kind of go hand in hand, in my opinion. So much like the Turtles 2 arcade game for the NES, the SNES version of Turtles in Time has notable differences in presentation. It made extensive use of the Mode 7 forward scrolling effect in the Neon Knight Riders level, changing it to an over-the-shoulder perspective and having throwing foot soldiers flying directly at and hitting the screen as well. The sounds also differ between the arcade and SNES versions. The SNES version it's missing certain voice samples for both the Turtles and boss characters. But in addition, the arcade version's title theme song, Pizza Power, was also replaced with the instrumental version of the cartoon theme song. So you can kind of lose out a little bit on the audio and the music. Various alterations were made to the SNES version's gameplay. Sewer Surfin' and Neon Knight Riders were changed to bonus levels of sorts with a new Technodrome stage that was added, which features a boss battle with Shredder sitting in a battle tank in the foreground, which requires the player to hit the tank with foot soldiers throwing them at the screen. Several enemies were changed in the Super Nintendo version as well. Four other new bosses were added. The Rat King at the end of the Sewer Surfing level. Slash was replaced entirely with Cement Man in the prehistoric level. And on the Pirate Ship level, the duo of Bebop and Rocksteady replaced Toka and Razar, unfortunately, who were moved to the Technodrome level. The game also changes the final battle of Shredder to Super Shredder from the Secret of the Ooze film. The SNES version also adds two regular enemies, Roadkill Rodneys. They replace the boxing robots, and also Mausers are in that version. What are the pros to Turtles in Time? It literally takes everything that was great about the OG TMNT arcade game and improves upon it in all aspects of graphics, sound, music, gameplay, attack movesets, and boss battles. The fatter package received in the SNES version, as I like to call it, of the game with the extra stages, characters, and gameplay modes. It may not be visually and aurally pleasing as the arcade version, but it's already a step up from the NES's TMNT2, and you get all the extra meat as well. The arcade version has Pizza Power. So now it's actually, that's drawing from three different mediums. Pizza Power is a song from the TMNT Coming Out of Their Shells tour, which is a cool inclusion to have from an otherwise questionable concert production, if I must say so. You chuckling, you must be familiar with that.
Yes, I am.
The cons. Basically, it's the same as the OG. It's easy. It can feel repetitive to players visiting this sequel. And that caveat is that it's too much like the OG, I guess. So if you felt like the OG was easy and boring getting through that, you're just probably not going to consider this worth your time. Though I would have to say something is really wrong with you if you think that way, and you should be condemned if you can't simply have fun playing this game.
Well, I didn't play the first one, so I didn't play this one either. Sorry, I have no feedback for you.
Have you played any of the Ninja Turtle games? Any of them?
I've played it in the arcade, just in passing, never seriously.
Oh, really? So you never played any of the NES, SNES, Genesis, any of the ones that weren't arcades, but home console?
Those releases? Consoles have never been in my home.
Are you going to play the new one that's coming out?
Probably not.
Okay.
Just because, I mean, they mean nothing to me. Ninja Turtles kind of missed me just growing up, where clearly they had more weight in the early 90s, 80s, things like that.
Gotcha.
Again, I was too young sure, there was like the cartoon was on TV, and I think it was just, it was aimed more at an older audience at the time. Mm-hmm. And I've always appreciated and kind of known what they are, but the games were not what I was looking for.
Okay.
In a game. So because my first console was the N64.
Right.
So I wasn't wanting that. And yeah, it wasn't.
Okay.
Wasn't the time.
Okay. Gotcha. I mean, it's generational. I will give you a pass on that. My history goes all the way back to literally like the start of home console gaming. I'm old. So I guess I got to give you a pass on that. But anyway, what is your number one?
All right. So my number one, going a bit more modern with mine, Star Wars. Star Wars deserves its own top seven episode in general.
I agree.
Because there are a lot of Star Wars games, and a lot of them are good.
Yep.
And they don't suffer from the movie tie-in, bad game stereotype. Sure, that there might be a few, but there's a lot of good stuff. So I went with Star Wars Battlefront. And I want to talk about kind of the series as a whole, because there are four games, technically, two and then a bit of a reboot and then two more. Mm-hmm. But so we had the originals first came out in 2004, the second in 2006. And the second is what I played a lot. And basically what that game was basically pretend to be whatever you want to be in Star Wars. Imagine being a kid, getting all your Star Wars action figures out and throwing them at each other. That's what this game was. And you would pick between the two different eras, prequel era or the original trilogy. I guess, what would that be? The Rebellion era, mm-hmm. something like that. And so, you know, Rebels versus Stormtroopers or the Naboo, the Clone Troopers versus the Battle Droids and things like that. And you would unlock heroes and villains to play with during the matches. So you'd be running around as Anakin, or you'd be Darth Vader, or even General Grievous running around with your four lightsabers. And it was just this really great chaotic fun that had great music, again, with John Williams. All that music is in there. And then the second one added onto that by even having space battles that were a ton of fun, mm-hmm. knocking ships out of the sky, doing dogfights, landing on their ship cruisers and like blowing them up from the inside. All a lot of fun. And then later, so first off, this was made by Pandemic Studios and LucasArts back in the day in 2004. Once Disney bought all of LucasArts in, what was that, like 2012? I want to say that purchase happened, mm-hmm. something like that. They gave a 10-year deal to EA to start making Star Wars games. And the first one they did was just called Star Wars Battlefront. And it was kind of a reboot of the series. EA and DICE made this. And it is beautiful. Like, graphically, there's still, like, this still looks better than a lot of newer games than this game. It was disappointing at launch because there was only multiplayer. Mm. And people were super disappointed that there was no campaign, nothing to do by yourself, only play the multiplayer. And they were also disappointed that it was only the original trilogy, no prequel trilogy. And they're really confused why that was. But honestly, I think it worked out really well because just focusing on the original trilogy allowed them to be super authentic with it, with just the sounds, the environments, the characters that you saw in it. I thought it was really immersive. And yes, they did come out with Battlefront 2, which also looks really good and added space battles again. I'm not a big fan of how 2 allows you to be any hero at any time. I know it's a game, but that kind of breaks the immersion for me. I don't want to see Rey killing battle droids, ooh, running around in that era. I just don't like that. The 2015 Battlefront it just hit at this perfect time for me where Star Wars was back. Like, this was when the new movie was coming out before the movies completely sucked again by the time they ended. I've liked episode 7, and Star Wars had been gone for so long. Like, sure, you know, Star Wars never technically goes away.
Right.
But this 2015 year hit with like, oh, wow, Walmart is full of Star Wars merch again. All the stuff from this upcoming movie. There's this brand new game. Sure, it's not tied to the new movie, but I don't care. And I just remember that like Christmas season of building up to the new Star Wars coming out. A New Hope. No, not New Hope. The Force Awakens. Yep. I never really felt that, like, just this joy for Star Wars again. And because the previous time was, what, 1999 as Phantom Menace was coming out. But I was pretty young for that. But I mean, that's another story entirely. That was a great time as well, building up to a new Star Wars. But this 2015 Battlefront, I played nonstop. I loved it so much, just constantly playing these matches, especially Hoth and Endor, but just how pretty they looked. Like, this was just a very authentic Star Wars feeling game. And I loved being in that world. And I just wanted to give out a little shout out to the Thermal Imploder, a grenade that you could throw in that game, which had some of the best sound design of an awesome implosion going off. And I'd love just hitting people with that Thermal Imploder. Did you play this much?
I never played that game.
Oh, dang. Our number ones do not agree.
No.
We do not agree with each other at all.
No. I don't know how to explain how I'm particular with Star Wars games. I agree that there could be a top 7 episode, or it's just a top whatever episode of Star Wars games. I don't know that it's very good for this podcast, unless I had a guest, because I probably only ever played like 9 Star Wars games in my life, or something. So it'd be pretty close. The Super Nintendo trilogy, the Star Wars arcade, Force Unleashed. I played the Vader Immortal VR games.
Yeah.
Of course, Knights of the Old Republic. I mean, in my opinion, if you haven't played that, you probably shouldn't be playing any Star Wars games, in my opinion.
I've not played it.
Oh, really?
Well, it's because I didn't have an Xbox.
Oh, okay. Well,
I was a kid. I only get one system, and that was GameCube.
It's being re-released, so.
Yeah, I'm going to get it on PS4 because they're remaking that. Or, sorry, PS5. Yeah.
And I know I've played one or two of the Lego ones. Oh, Dark Forces, too. God, that goes back. Yeah, I know Dark Forces because I was playing that right after I graduated high school. Yeah, but Battlefront 2, I don't know. I don't know why I didn't. Maybe it was an EA thing.
Yeah, it could be.
You know, I think it probably falls right around in the last 5 years where I pretty much just stopped playing EA games for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
But I have to, if I go back even before I'm done playing EA games, like, I still like was pretty particular about what Star Wars games I played. And maybe it's because I felt like the video game market was oversaturated with Star Wars titles that, you know, I just didn't care. And maybe if like there was one that caught my eye, I'm like, okay, you know, I'll give it a shot and I'll play it. And I did. And then maybe I didn't care for another few years or something.
Sure.
So yeah, I can't say that I've played the Battlefront series. So I've got nothing to say on that. But it has actually kind of piqued my interest in going back and taking a look at all the Star Wars games that have come out over time and see if I can maybe pull together an episode on that. So, yeah. So unfortunately I've got no opinions to share on that.
No worries.
And Pod Racers. That's probably, I am like a racing game guy. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of my YouTube channels was racing games until I shut it down. And then, Pod Racers is actually, believe it or not, one of my favorite Star Wars.
Oh yeah,
titles, that's a good game. Because it's a racing game. So
yeah.
So yeah, okay. Well, I think that's gonna do it for our lists. But before we go, there's one more thing we gotta do. The Poda Rotas player pro tip of the day.
Oh yeah.
So what is the Poda Rota player's pro tip of the day? Well, it could be a legitimate pro tip for any one of the last, well, what you heard here, 14 games on the list to help you out with gameplay or anything. Nice little Easter eggs, something like that. It could be complete garbage and trash, or it could be somewhere right in the middle, maybe just a nice little Trivial Pursuit type fact. But I want to throw it over to you, Cameron, on this. Do you have a pro tip to share with the listeners today?
Yeah, I got some garbage pro tip.
Oh, it's garbage today. All right.
So swinging on back to Spider-Man 2.
I see what you did there.
This is actually a pro tip that my wife has always told me, because she loved this game growing up too, is that the fastest way around the city is to dolphin dive. And so what that is you could get a running start and then dive, and you'd like slide on the pavement on your chest, and you could like keep jumping, like bouncing, doing this like down the street. She said this is the fastest way to do it. I don't believe her at all, because surely swinging over buildings is quicker than skidding down the streets. But I don't know. So prove me wrong, prove me right. There's your garbage pro tip. Dolphin dive through Spider-Man 2 to get around faster.
I was going to possibly look for that game, and then you're like, yeah, you really don't have to play it. But now I'm feeling like I need to put it back on my list just to try the dolphin diving. We're going to write it on my last sheet here. Yes, do get it. Do look. Spider-Man 2. All right. So that was a very interesting. That was Poda Rota's player pro tip of the day today. So that's going to do it. Cameron, I sincerely thank you for wasting your time the last 2 hours with us here today. I want you to give our listeners some information on where they can look for you.
Yeah. So Region Unlocked, we're in most podcast places, Apple, Spotify, things like that. We have a YouTube video coming up here soon, probably just before Christmas. It is going to be our N64 special, because it is our 64th episode. Ooh. And Jake and I worked really hard on that. We don't post much to YouTube. We have one video on there that was our 50th episode, so we thought it'd be fun to do it in video. So feel free to check out our YouTube channel as well. But there will be not much content until the 64th episode, which will be up there soon. But other than that, we do not post anything on social medias. So just look in your podcast apps. And you could email us at regionunlockedpodcast@gmail.com.
Excellent.
And that's it.
Excellent. Well, thanks for sharing your credentials there at the end. For me, I'm a little bit more complicated, as you all know. I've got the channels on YouTube. I've got, of course, this podcast that you can find anywhere. I'm also on all the social medias, and you can find everything, the links to everything, the social medias, the YouTubes, and even the most recent upload of this podcast, if you'd rather do a one-stop shop at potationrotation.com. And as always, if you've got any kind of beef or gripes with anything that I've said, you can email Cameron today, because I'm not going to have any of it. No, I'm just kidding. Anything that I said, you can email me. Anything he said, you can email him. So that's going to do it. Again, Cameron, thanks. Hopefully.
Hey, not a problem. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem. Hopefully, maybe next time, somehow, even if it's at 3 o'clock in the morning, we can have Jake on an episode as well.
I will not be a part of that if it's 3 in the morning.
Okay. Well, maybe not. All right, so that's going to do it. I want to thank everybody for joining us today on this episode of the Retro Rankings podcast, and I will see everybody in another couple of weeks.
Bye.
Later.